Hey, yo, it's the bad guy, Scott Hall here. Check out Pro Wrestling Nation, Chico.
What's up, guys? This is Crazy Maria Dawson, your current Resistance Pro Women's Champion, and you are tuning into Pro Wrestling Nation.
This is PWA Ontario Champion, Mike the Match Hart, and you're listening to Pro Wrestling's number one podcast, Pro Wrestling Nation, with Sam Medina.
This is Global Force Wrestling, Scott D'Amore, and you're listening to Pro Wrestling Nation.
To another amazing, awesome, stupendous, death-defying, action-packed episode of Pro Wrestling Nation, and welcome to Super Bowl City, coming at you live to tape from the Bay Area in beautiful sunny California, the home of Super Bowl 50. And I can tell you right now that the Super Bowl weekend has got nothing on WrestleMania weekend. Man, WrestleMania weekend was off the hook. I'm so glad that WrestleMania came to me this year, last year, whatever. WrestleMania 31, Levi Stadium. I got to, let's talk about that. Let's talk about a whole bunch of stuff. Let's talk about Awesome Kong. Let's talk about AJ Styles. Let's talk about, what else is happening? Let's talk about Bret the Hitman Hart. Let's talk about Shinsuke Nakamura. Let's talk about all that great stuff today on Pro Wrestling Nation. I, of course, am your host. My name is Funky Sam Medina. I am a stand-up comedian. I am a wrestling podcaster. But most importantly, I am a person that will be going to the WWE San Jose tomorrow night. Because by the time you listen to this, I will be on my feet and cheering for the house show debut of the phenomenal one himself, AJ Styles. So sit on the edge of your seats, stay tuned, because I will give you a report on WWE San Jose. I'll tell you what's going on. I'll tell you what AJ Styles did. I'll tell you if he won with the Styles Clash, if he won with the Calf Killer, if he won with a regular roll-up. I'm so excited because this is going to be AJ's debut house show. It's going to be his first house show. So I'm sure it's not going to be like Damian Sandow or like Bo Dallas or something like that. I am hoping that they give us AJ Styles versus Chris Jericho. I know that's setting my standards, my expectations a little bit too high, but this is AJ's first house show. It's his debut. But you know what? I'm sorry. AJ Styles can go out there with Corey Hollis for all I care. I am so excited to see him in the WWE and live tomorrow night. By the time you hear this, it'll be tonight because this is going up tomorrow. So you'll hear it, you'll be excited, and you'll be waiting for the results. And I will have them for you. So don't wait too long. Just go somewhere on the internet, look for him. Look for my name. Look for all kinds of cool stuff. What's going on, people? How the hell are you doing tonight? I'm so excited. I'm so excited because this right here, what you're listening to is episode 78 of Pro Wrestling Nation. Episode 78 of Pro Wrestling Nation, but, there's a but there, isn't there? It is my inaugural episode. My first ever episode. That's available on Gurwick.net. So go to Gurwick.net. You can check out all the news, all the results, everything you need over at Gurwick.net since 1997. When I first started going on the internet, the very first time I used AOL dial-up, I went to Gurwick.net. And I still go there to this day because Gerwick.net is awesome, and I'm really, really thrilled and excited to be available on Gerwick.net. So go check it out. Go support them. Go support me. Go support professional wrestling. So the music stopped, and I feel kind of weird now. Anyways, how's it going, everybody? As you noticed, you probably noticed. Maybe you can't read. Maybe you didn't notice. My guest on this episode is none other than the Wildcat, Chris Harris. Now, I'm an old school TNA fan. Oh man, TNA in 2002 through 2005, 2006, TNA was, nothing was better. TNA was even better than WWE at that point. I know you're probably going to argue the point. I know, whatever, it's debatable. Maybe if I sat down and put it on paper, I wouldn't think so. But in my head, in my brain, TNA in the early 2000s was better, a better product than WWE. You know, like I said, who knows, right? That's open for debate. But for sake of argument, we'll just say that. Because Chris Harris was part of the TNA's originality. I don't know, that's not really a common phrase there, that I just made that up. But no, really though, the beginning of TNA, there's a few core guys that are still there, you know, the James Storms and the Abysses. And you can't ever forget about Chris Harris, man. He was one of the founding fathers of TNA. It's funny though, in this interview, because I did this interview a few months ago, when James Storm debuted in NXT. So we were talking about James Storm being in NXT. So this interview is a little bit old. I did this interview. Oh, so weird. Okay. I did this interview and then I kind of had a Dave Chappelle moment. I got a little crazy and I just took some time off. I just felt like I was like burnt out as an artist, you know, and I didn't podcast for like 2 months. And then my girlfriend's like, when are you going to podcast again? I'm like, probably the beginning of the year, you know? And she was like, oh, are you sure? I was like, well, maybe I'll start early. And I got back on it like mid-December. So it took like 2 months off or a month and a half or whatever. I was going to just stop till the first of the year. And I don't know, man. Sometimes you just feel like you hit a wall, you know? And you just got to go away for a minute. But I feel, it's funny. And another thing about this interview was like, when I left for a month and a half, 2 months, I feel like I came back better. I mean, like, you know, whatever. Better than I was before. Like more, I found my voice a little bit and I found, my rant. You know, I kind of did that on the way, to me taking some time off. But nonetheless, this interview is timeless. It doesn't need to be posted 2 months ago. It could be posted today. And I felt like, what better, for my first podcast on Gerwick.net, but to bring you an almost hour-long interview with the Wildcat Chris Harris. Because let me tell you something, Chris Harris has been through it all. He started in 94 in the Indies, and he worked his way up to WCW in 2000. Then WCW closed, and he goes to TNA Wrestling. Okay? He is an original roster member to TNA. TNA original. Okay? He's a TNA original. And then he's in TNA for a long time, right? Like 4 years, 5 years, 6 years. And then he goes to WWE. And I don't want to say the Brayden Walker's a joke, you know, but he kind of is. And it's not his fault. We talk about all this stuff. We talk about Brayden Walker. We talk about the Wildcat Chris Harris. We talk about America's Most Wanted. We talk about WCW. We talk about going back to TNA for a one-off. We talk about what he's doing, how his health is, what his life is like, what he does in his free time. This was a good interview with Chris Harris. Listening back to it, I didn't listen to all of it. I listened to some of it to make sure sound quality was good and blah, 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 make sure I could use it and da, 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 da. But I really did like it. And I thought back to myself, you know what? I wish I would have posted this when it was fresh, because I really like it. And I felt like I've robbed my fans of listening to this tremendous, I just made that word up. I like making stuff up. That's tremendous, awesome interview. Oh, see, tremendous is awesome and tremendous together. Oh, how cool am I today? Anyways, so, so there's a Chris Harris interview. You guys are going to love it. Love it, love it, love it, love it. Trust me, I love it. Be a mark like me and just love it. Love it, love it, love it. Like it's Roman Reigns and I'm Vince McMahon. Feeding it to you, just force feeding it to you. There's a lot of stuff I want to talk about. There's a lot of stuff I want to cover. I do want to talk about some news and stuff, but since this interview is, you know, before the news, let's put it before the news. I'm going to talk about all kinds of stuff when I come back. We'll talk about AJ Styles. We'll talk about Awesome Kong. We'll talk about Sonny's sex tape. We'll talk about what else is there to talk about in the world of professional wrestling? NXT releases. We'll talk about that. There's been all kinds of cool stuff. I'm just teasing you guys right now. I'm just leaving some teasers. I'm just throwing it out there. We'll talk about the Bigfoot. We'll talk about aliens. We'll talk about vampires. And, you know, I'm going to say some stuff here, and you're going to be, like, all excited. You'll be on the edge of your seat. You're going to go to the Chris Harris interview, and then when we come back, we're not going to talk about any of it. We're just going to be like, aha, just kidding. I tricked you. No. But for those, though. Talk about the news and stuff at the end of the interview. So right now I am going to kick it over to my interview with none other than the Wildcat Chris Harris. And I'm totally excited to bring this interview to you. Before I go, I just skipped a whole bunch of stuff. Pro Wrestling Nation is a weekly pro wrestling podcast where you can be found every single week on iTunes, Stitcher, Beyond Pod, the TuneIn app, RedDragonsRadio.com. And now, for your listening pleasure, your number one source for pro wrestling news, Gurick.net since 1997. So go check out Gurick.net. And if you like me, follow me on Twitter at Funky Sam Medina, or follow the show on Twitter at PWN Podcast. I mostly talk about wrestling on my PWN Podcast page. But I'm talking about wrestling more and more on my regular one a little bit, because I just, you know, people just follow me. I'm just like a totally such a wrestling celebrity on, just kidding. But, you know, like, I got some wrestling people over there, like my boy, Scotty Riggs, who keeps telling me that he'll do the podcast, but not now. So look forward to Scotty Riggs someday. I like Scotty Riggs, man. He's so cool. He shouted me out. If you guys listened last week, I talked about Scotty Riggs shouting me out on Twitter. Mr. Scotty Riggs. You know, got my friends, my wrestling friends on both of those Twitter accounts. So follow either one or follow both. Follow both. Why not? It's fun, right? Was that it? Follow Chris Harris at AMW Wildcat. All right, I'm going to go to my interview with Chris Harris now. Enjoy, and I will be back in a little while. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, Funky Sam Medina. I am on the line with a TNA original, a 7-time TNA Tag Team Champion, former WWE Superstar, ladies and gentlemen, Wildcat Chris Harris. How you doing, Chris?
I'm great, man. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for coming on the line. You know, you don't really know this, but I talked to you a couple years ago because I was helping my friend with a podcast, and you agreed to do it, but then, like, his podcast kind of stopped going, so it never really happened. And then I got my podcast about 2 years ago, and I've actually been looking for you because I really wanted to interview you. I'm a big fan of yours. I'm a big fan of the beginning of TNA, when TNA was really good. And, you know, your Twitter was dark. Your email, it kept getting bounced back to me. Like, I would email you and be like, this email does not exist. I'm like, oh, man. I was Googling you trying to figure out how to contact you. I saw some websites were saying that you had a cancer scare, and then some websites were saying that you didn't have it. And it was craziness, and you finally came back to Twitter. So welcome back.
Yeah, man. I did kind of fall off the map there for a little bit. I was my residence was in Florida for the past several years, and I moved back to my home state of Kentucky a couple years ago. So a lot of things had to be switched over. I had to, you know, just take care of personal things and you know, get everything started back up again. But yeah, everything's been good, and I think it's harder than people think to try to connect for any kind of interview anymore. You know, because you got Skype, you got, you know, the text. I mean, there's you know, trying to find a good time for everybody. It's just harder.
Oh yeah, no, I know about scheduling. Scheduling is so tough. So how's your health? Did you have a cancer scare, or is that something that the internet made up?
Apparently it was what the internet made up. I did have some, and still have some health issues. Where that turned into cancer, I'm not exactly sure. But, I first heard that a couple years ago, and I immediately posted something on Twitter saying that it wasn't true, and I thanked everybody, but the truth was that I wasn't going through any kind of a cancer bout, and then it came up again just a few months ago, I guess, and again I tried to put it out there, but. that's how the internet rolls, I guess.
Once the internet kind of gets something, it just kind of runs with it, and then who knows what it turns into from there.
We'll make it another bid towards it, and just say that I have not and do not, as of now, have any kind type of cancer.
Congratulations, that's good news.
I guess it's a good thing.
Yeah, no, definitely. So you're back home in Kentucky. How is that?
Oh, it's been good. I do miss Florida, but I'm back home with a lot of family and friends, and it's been really good.
Awesome, awesome. So let's go back a little bit in your career here. It says that you debuted in 94. I saw that on the internet, that another internet thing here. You debuted in 94, but you didn't really start making big waves until 2000 when you signed with WCW Wrestling under a developmental deal. How did you go from just kind of starting out to ending up with WCW?
Through those years, I felt like I paid my dues, got my experience. Even though we were doing a lot of traveling, it wasn't the places that would, you could get attention at. And, just through a couple of connections, I made a connection to Nashville, which is a huge wrestling city. And, started going down there and working for Burt Prentice. He had the connections. Worked for him for about a year, and he had hooked me up with Terry Taylor, who was, at the time, was talent relations for WCW, and started out, they put me under a developmental deal, which was great. I feel like I finally signed with one of the big companies, but then who would have thought, back in the day, who would have thought that one of them would go under? And I'd say I was under contract for about 6 months before WCW went under.
Oh, wow. That's it, huh? Yeah, back in the 90s, just wrestling was just so strong and flourishing and just getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and I guess the bubble had to pop somewhere. You went to WCW along with, Abyss and James Storm and all these other guys who were kind of, I would say, the next generation who WCW was probably planning on grooming into the early 2000s and kind of making them into the stars. What was it like there? Because you were wrestling for, Saturday Night and stuff like that. What was it like in WCW?
Well, at the time, I was just an excited guy coming up. And like you said, the especially the late 90s was just so big that, I wanted to be part of that. I mean, if there was anything bad, it was just the frustration of not being able to do more. There were ideas kicked around, so we were close to some type of debut, but I enjoyed the matches. It gave me great exposure, great experience. It was cut short. That's all.
Yeah, definitely. Well, don't feel bad about yourself. I mean, AJ Styles was kind of a nobody in WCW, and we all saw what happened to him. So WCW goes under, and the wrestling industry is kind of like, it's craziness. Like, WWF buys WCW, they buy ACW, and now there's essentially nowhere else to work. When WCW went under, were you worried about a job, or did you have things lined up, or what was it like for guys like you who were kind of the next generation of guys who weren't really famous yet?
Well, it seems like the WWE, they kind of canceled out the top guys, I guess, for whatever reason, just bad history or attitude problems. So they didn't sign a lot of the big guys, right at first. They took kind of the mid-card guys and tried to build them. And then there were guys on the lower deck like me that they just, I don't think they were even interested in looking at or what. I wasn't worried at first because I got paid, a few extra months, even when they were out of business. I got a few extra months on my contract. But once that was over, man, especially just the high of signing with one of the big companies, and to think that rug was jerked out from underneath you. So I spent a good year and a half worrying about what was coming up in the future. But I did go back to Nashville and was trying to work down there as much as I could. There was more work there than up here. And even tried a couple startup companies, you know, that just, you know, you might get paid, but it wasn't there to last. And then we heard of this another startup company from Jeff. I'd known Jeff from WCW and Jeff Jarrett. And we heard of another startup company, and try not to get too excited about it just because you've been let down so many times. But when we had a chance to try out for it, you know, see what they were doing, we jumped on it. And, you know, the ride took off.
Yeah, definitely. So the TNA Impact, or TNA, comes up, and it's exciting, and it's on pay-per-view, and it's every week. We used to go to my friend's house, and we would watch it every single Wednesday on pay-per-view. It was at the time, WWE was really kind of stale, like now,
right.
But a little more kind of, yeah. And TNA was exciting, and it was new, and it was a bunch of guys from WCW that we knew, plus a bunch of guys we didn't know. The AJ Styles, the Frankie Kazarians, the America's Most Wanteds, stuff like that. And so it was amazing. And
it was a great group of guys put together, and we were all very hungry, and we wanted to make it work. And like you said, you know, even back then, even though there were some struggles with the company, as far as the talent goes, you know, we were out there to perform our best every single night.
Yeah, so when you showed up there, was it a bunch of people like the guys who were the WCW, the guys at WCW were going to make the Next Generation, AJ Styles and yourself and James Storm and Abyss? Was it a bunch of those guys around you in TNA, and did that make you like more confident because you knew a lot of the locker room?
I had kind of had a head start a little bit, I guess, because a lot of the guys, like you said, were WCW mid card, lower card. But so I knew we had a great group of guys, and you know, we didn't have to worry about the work ethic. You know, we were going to work as hard as could be. But I felt a little bit more comfortable because, you know, it was a startup for everybody. You know, there's nobody ahead of each other. It was just a matter of showing our talent and going with what we made of it. Of course, they brought in a few top names for the first couple pay-per-views, but that's to be I understand that, because you need some names to draw some attention. But then once they caught on to, you know, guys like, you know, America's Most Wanted, AJ, Jerry Lynn, you know, once they caught on to what was going on, people got really excited, and that's how it kind of built from there.
I've always heard that you and James Storm are just kind of thrown together because they didn't really know what to do with you guys, and then America's Most Wanted just gelled. Is that? Can you tell us how that got started?
Yeah, there's some truth to that. I remember they had signed us. You know, I'm not sure who was 100% in charge of, you know, who to sign, but I know Jeff Jarrett had a lot to do with it. Bob Ryder was the one signing talent back then, and they wanted us both on board, and we were happy to be on board. Of course, our first thought was, you know, doing the singles. But while they were kind of looking to see where to put everybody, what position to put everybody in, they just threw us together one night. And I don't think there was any plans out of that. But once they saw how we were, they, you know, we kept doing it a few times. And, you know, that Storm and I's attitude was pretty much, hey, this is our shot. So, you know, if this is where they put us, we're going to be the best tag team that there can be. And so, we rode with it, and we just tried to, you know, come up with, you know, whether it's the name or the moves or, you know, anything like that. We just kept riding with it. And it's turned out to be the greatest thing in my career.
That's really interesting. It was a really good tag team. I really enjoyed the dynamic that you and James Storm had. I feel like because I never heard of you guys, it was that much better, because it wasn't like, okay, well, here's Disco Inferno, or, you know, here's somebody who I've seen in for the past 5 or 6 years on my TV again. It was two guys who I never heard of, who went out there, were real tag team. They looked like they belonged together. They had the moves, and it was a great dynamic. You guys did an awesome job. What would just, like you said, was the greatest part of your career, but like, what did AMW like really mean to you?
Well, I mean, it's changed through the years, but like I said, at the time it was our opportunity, so we, you know, jumped on it, and every year we just kept looking for better ways to make the tag team, and our matches, I think, spoke for themselves. You know, we were hard workers, we had great opponents. But yeah, that just the way it turned out, you know, with the multiple tag team reigns and, you know, tag team of the year, a couple organizations, you know, we were riding high that, and I loved it. And now that I get to look back on it, it was probably one of the best times in my career, but also, just personally. I mean, I loved traveling with Storm. You know, it was always good to have a partner there with you. But him and I got along great, and it's a great memory to think back on. America's Most Wanted. I love it, and people still talk about a lot of it today. That's which really makes me happy.
Yeah, one of TNA's like proudest moments was America's Most Wanted against Triple X, and it was Six Sides of Steel. Elix Skipper climbs up and he walks the cage. You remember that?
How could I forget?
TNA still, like, I don't know, still to this day, but I know for a long, long time they would show that footage. That was one of the most amazing moments in TNA history. I don't remember, was that you up there? Or was that James up there?
Oh, it was me.
That was you. So
I don't get enough credit for this. I'm the one that's taking the bump, and
exactly.
Everybody always talks about Elix, and then they're like, well, now which one of them took that? And
I actually watched a clip earlier today on YouTube, and I couldn't tell just because, you know, you guys look similar, and it was just not a great angle. So for you, like, you knew this was coming. He was walking the cage, and he may or may not be able to pull it off. And then it all depends on how you reacted to what he did. Like, were you nervous going into that spot?
Oh, sure, man. I mean, it's, you know, we were nervous about the whole match, but especially that point, you know, when I'm sitting up there, and I think I was even had my attention on Daniels at the time. And next thing I know, Skipper's coming right at me. And it was a long fall, but it was worth it, because that match stands out in my mind. And obviously the fans still talk about it to this day, like you said.
Yeah, definitely. I know. I saw that, and it was just like a complete back bump right off just off the top of the cage, boom, on your back, flat in the middle of the ring, and it looked like it hurt. So.
I thought I broke my ribs when I landed, but wow. we all took some hard hits that match, but it was all worth it. Even those guys would tell you it was worth it. It was magic that night.
I was at home watching that night on pay-per-view. That's for sure. That's for sure. What was it like? I don't remember what year Dixie came in. Were you still in TNA, correct, when Dixie Carter took over?
Yeah, she was involved the first year, because like I said.
Oh, she was involved the first year? Wow,
yeah,
I didn't realize
like I
that.
Said, there were some struggles for, I don't even know, it was like maybe 6 to 8 to 10 months. And our offices, the TNA offices in Nashville, were in the same building that her and her parents' company were in. And I think Jeff and her had some sort of a meeting, and they had actually known each other prior. And, of course, I don't know how the meeting went, but they made a deal, and Dixie was on board.
Did the dynamic, just the environment, the backstage change when Dixie took over TNA?
I don't think so. I think we were actually more excited than anything, because we had a money backer, and you know, any fool knows that, you know, that's one of the most important things you need with a new company. But I think originally the deal was she was going to handle all the business in, and you know, Jeff was, you know, he's the guy with the experience as a wrestler and executive, so he was going to handle all the boys. So no, the dynamic didn't change much. You know, we still listen to Jeff and the other guys they would bring in. Dutch Mantel was there. I'm not sure really where the transition went. You know, Dixie getting more control over the in-ring, the in-ring of it. But no, that we were more excited than anything that we were still going to be around.
That's awesome. So I didn't even know Dixie came in that early. Apparently, so she must have just been a kind of a silent partner for a while, and then eventually it was more public knowledge, because I thought she came in like 2 or 3 years later, actually.
It's a lot sooner than you think, yeah. I mean, I know what you mean, because even us looking back, we know she wasn't there at the beginning, but it turns out she was there a lot sooner than people think.
Yeah, so six titles with James Storm. I almost said Lance Storm. The six titles with James Storm was later. I remember you kind of broke out on your own. I think Storm was hurt, and you were kind of just there. And they gave you a singles run, and you came darn close to being the NWA World Heavyweight Champion. I thought you were going to win it. I think you were in some big match, even King of the Mountain. What was it? What was the singles career like for you in TNA?
Oh, it was amazing, man. You know, like I told you before, the AMW tag team, you know, is probably one of the greatest things in my career. But you know, you always strive for that singles run, and Storm was out with a shoulder injury, and they gave me an opportunity with that, and I was running with all the top guys. Met Jeff a couple times. Those matches were awesome. I loved working with him, and yeah, I was so close to the world title. That would have just topped it off. But
yeah, I mean, I feel like they should have given it to you. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, that's yeah. Well, me too.
I just feel like it would have been a good story, because you were like a hometown boy. You know, you were one of the original guys. For you just to rise the ranks and, you know, even have a short run as the NWA champion, I think that would have been a good story for them to tell.
Oh, yeah. Even a short run would have been great. But that was around the time that we started filming for Fox Sports. We started filming in Orlando. And, you know, we were kind of starting over to a whole new audience. So they wanted to put everybody back where they belong and where we could get noticed again. So they put AJ back in the X division. Storm was cleared then, so the two of us were back together as a top tag team. And I think Jeff was a world champion, of course, and that's how we started on Fox Sports. So it, you know, kind of took off again from there. We kept hitting very good hurdles, you know, and just kicking ass with them.
I didn't realize that when you guys went to Fox Sports that there was a reset done. It makes sense, though, looking back on it. I feel like that was kind of maybe that was the right thing to do, because you and James together were able to probably sell the tag team division on TV a little bit, as opposed to other tag teams who probably couldn't do it as well.
No, that's exactly what it was, what you just said, a reset. We just kind of reset to where they knew what would work. Because
they knew, they knew who was strong where.
If we were just going to keep going with the storylines, you know, we're kind of unsure with that. But we were very safe putting AJ back in the X division. I mean, he was one of the guys that made it. They were very safe putting AMW back together and having us, make another title run. So, and of course Jeff at the top. I mean, that was great as well, because he represented the company both in and out of the ring.
Yeah, that's true. Jeff Jarrett really kind of he claims he carried that company on his shoulders. He kind of did, in a way. I mean, just from me, from a fan's perspective. So not too long after, I guess, was it after the Fox Sports deal, you parted ways with TNA Wrestling? Like, how did you end up leaving TNA, and when, around what time was
that? Oh, no, that wasn't until 2008, I think. So we were well off. We were off Fox. We were on Spike, running, doing great ratings there.
Yeah, I remember when they debuted on Spike. That's when TNA was just clicking on all cylinders.
Yeah, and Storm and I were together then. And we had a good, once we went to Fox and then Spike, I mean, we had a good 4 or 5 year run there. And as far as me leaving, that was beginning of 2008, and Storm and I had already had our singles run. We had our feud together, and I don't know, my contract was coming up. I was kind of trying to feel TNA out. This is what they were going to do. They kind of left me in limbo there for a while, and there was interest from WWE, and I mean it took a lot of thinking for me to do, and wasn't sure if I was making the right decision, but it was one of those things. Well, hey, you never know until you try, you know. And I never wanted to look back and say I never tried. So yeah, parted ways with TNA and signed with WWE.
What was it like just to go from this little, because TNA was essentially like a mom and pop shop wrestling company, to go to this corporation?
I'm trying to think how I felt at the time. I felt pretty good about it. They sure talk a good game, and
yeah, I hear that.
Oh yeah, I mean they talk a great game, and you know, we're going to do this, we're going to do that.
Do you remember any of the plans they had for you?
I'm sorry.
Do you remember any of the plans that they had for you?
Oh yeah, I mean there was all kinds of things that we were going to do, different gimmicks, and even one of the ideas was to keep me as the AMW type gimmick that we had. But I threw things at them, and you know, they liked certain things. You know, maybe another one we'd pass on. But I felt pretty confident there for a while, until one day they said, nope, we're not going to do any of that. We're going to go a different direction. And then just put me out there with no build up, no nothing. I mean, I was a nobody to a lot of people. That
really no gimmick, yeah.
Yeah, nothing. I mean, you know, I've seen what they've done with a lot of people, and you know, even a few weeks build up isn't that tough to do. Now I was prepared for anything. So a lot of people say that, you know, the name and all that was, but I was prepared to change my name because I knew how they worked. And what I wasn't prepared to do was to change my style of wrestling. I mean, it worked for me for all these years, and I felt like I had a success going as far as in the ring. I mean, it's almost like it was this detailed. It was almost like each move that I had, they would cross it off because it was too similar to something else that everybody else was doing. And they pretty much took my entire arsenal. I think my first match I was throwing 15 clotheslines because that's the only thing I was allowed to do.
Wow. That's crazy. I feel like if they would have brought you in as essentially the Wildcat character, I feel like you would have gotten over a lot better, because it would have been more of you instead of just this is what you are. It would have been be yourself. So did you skip developmental altogether? You just went straight to ECW television?
No. They sent me down there for about a week. Which is fine, because I had been off since I signed. I had been off probably 2 or 3 months, you know, still under contract. So, and of course, you can't work for any other company. So I was out of the ring for a few months. So they wanted me to go down there and just, you know, get back in ring shape. And I had no problem with that. That was fine. But then we went on TV, had my first match, and then they sent me down there for the week, and then I'd go back to Raw or SmackDown, and then they'd sent me right back down. So, I mean, I was, even though I was still living in Florida, they had me going back and forth and putting me through the developmental, which I kind of put up with, but it just made no sense. I was going in there and, you know, I'd had a lot of experience over all these other guys, but I'm in there taking, you know, a couple hundred bumps, you know, every single day. And, you know, I was getting injured, and it just made no sense to me. I don't know really what was going on behind closed doors, but I do know that those people love to mess with you. And so I just tried to have some thick skin and put up with it, but it just got to the point where I was dreading it. I dreaded going to Tampa, where the developmental was. I dreaded even going on the road. I dreaded going to TV. I started to hate the entire business as a whole.
Wow. Yeah, WWE didn't do very good with former TNA guys. Kazarian came in, Monty Brown came in, Loki came in, and nobody really had a lot of success there. I don't know if it was like, TNA guy, bury him, or if it was that they just didn't know how to use the person, because, you know, I feel like TNA had a lot more, you know, what do you want to do, instead of this is what you're doing tonight.
Well, that was what was crazy about anybody that went there. we already had a proven track record. So for a billion-dollar company to say that they don't know how to use somebody, I don't buy it. I think it's a bunch of BS. And I think the more years I spend in this business, I feel like that there was definitely something, I don't know what, but there was something in the WWE that they just did not want to push TNA guys. Every time somebody came with talent, they didn't know how to push them, didn't know what to do, or they, like with me, they threw you out there and, you know, with no marketing help or anything. The only people I've seen them do that with are people that have already been with WWE and then came to TNA and then went back. You know, Gail Kim.
Christian.
Even Ron Killings. We both left at the same time, but I'm not sure if people remember, but he was already with WWE, you know, back during the prime of the 90s. He was teaming with Road Dogg, and they were a pretty successful team for a little bit there. So us going back at the same time, he gets weeks of build up before his character comes out. They call him R-Truth, which is very similar to Ron the Truth Killings. He's coming out to his own music. I mean, everything just seemed to go right for him. And this is never a knock on him. I love Ron, and I think he deserves everything he's getting. I just wish that they would have put a little bit more effort into, you know, guys like me and, like you said, Monty or Low Key, you know, just other guys that just wanted a chance.
Yeah, I thought Frankie Kazarian was going to be a star in WWE, and he didn't. He quit on his own, too, because he was just like, I'm done with this place.
Yeah, Frankie should have been a star.
Oh,
he
yeah.
would have been. He's a star everywhere else he goes.
Yeah, he definitely is. I just saw Frankie and Rob Van Dam tear it up this past weekend. It was amazing.
Oh, that would have been a great match.
Were you there in ECW, you know, WWE, ECW, of course, when Monty Brown was there?
No, Monty had left not too long before I got there. I don't remember exactly what the details of his departure was, but I do know from talking to some of the guys, he was unhappy. I'm not sure what went on behind the scenes with him, but yeah, he chose to leave as well. I mean, there was just a lot of guys, and you could hear the same story from a lot of guys, man. Just, it's not just me. It's just the way they do business. And
oh, yeah. No, it's definitely not you. One of my favorite moments to just shake my head and shed a tear about was I was watching ECW. Monty Brown was doing his Marcus Corvon character. That was his name down there.
Right.
And he hit somebody with the pounce. And I was a huge Monty Brown fan from TNA. He hit somebody with the pounce. And the announcers go, oh, what an incredible move. I wonder what it's called. And across his tights, it said the word pounce. And I just thought that was ridiculous.
Well, that's another example right there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just do your homework a little bit, you guys, you know. It's crazy. Like, it really is. They really didn't treat TNA stars well. Did they just give you the name Braden Walker, or did you come up with it together, or they just say, this is your name, end of discussion?
No, they didn't. They actually didn't do that. I'm not sure what would have been worse, them just giving me a name and telling me that we're going with it, or what they did do. And I think you've heard this from a lot of other wrestlers that have been there. I've heard this about Austin, about Foley. They give you a name, a list of about 10, 15 names and tell you to pick from it. And some of the names are just disgusting and ridiculous.
Yeah, I bet.
But at the time, we were talking into, like I said, it's kind of a turnover from AMW, but like a bounty hunter gimmick. You know, I would still carry my cuffs, and there was all kinds of different ways we could go with it. The people that I pitched it to seemed to love it. But like I said, the writers just shut it down at one time. But we went through all kinds of different names, and I was trying to find a way to keep something of my own. I mean, we were even talking about, you know, like a Harris or a Harrison, something like that. And there was a movie that I saw that had to do with bounty hunters, and one of the main characters was Walker. And so I actually pitched the Walker part because I like that. And it's hard to remember how we came up with Braden. I think that there was just a lot of B names coming through, And I remember I talked to Mick Foley about it. I talked to Taz, and that was what was settled. You know, it was kind of a mutual thing, Braden Walker. And to be honest with you, like I told you earlier, you know, it doesn't matter what my name would have been. I feel like, you know, let me use my talent and I'll get any name over. But that's not how they worked. I mean, I had a new name and pretty much a zero personality.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Like, if they would have named you Braden Walker, even Wildcat Braden Walker, and they would have let you do the Wildcat gimmick like you were in TNA, I feel like it would have been so much more successful.
It would have been awesome. It would have been awesome.
Yeah,
I have no,
even named
I have
Braden
no doubt.
Walker.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, definitely. I said, even named Braden Walker, it would have been great.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that name. I mean,
no.
You know, I've heard worse on there, so.
yeah, like Marcus Corvon.
Yeah. And Monty actually had a background in professional football, so you're almost dumb not to even use his name to try to change everything about him.
Yeah, he kind of brought a crossover kind of thing if he would have been Monty Brown. Yeah, former NFL player Monty Brown.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been perfect. Yeah, definitely, definitely. So how long were you in WWE?
I'd say I was there about 6 months, you know, before I just had it. And I had a match on a Tuesday, which I can't remember I'm assuming it was for SmackDown. But I had a match on a Tuesday, and that was one of the times, well, that was the last time I felt in the ring like I was actually uncomfortable. And I'm not uncomfortable in the ring. That, you know, you can ask many of the passionate guys that have been in this business or that I've worked with. I mean, you know, we love being in the ring. It's like home. But I was just so uncomfortable with that match. And I came back and I remember talking to a couple of the agents, and I just told him, I said, I'm just not feeling it. It's, you know, I'm uncomfortable and I'm not liking it. And, you know, they tried to blow it off. But of course I now know that they were probably already thinking of the release, and it was the next day or next couple days, I got the call and they said, we're going to release you from the contract. And I think most people would, you know, that's pretty bad news. That's pretty sad news. But when they told me, I said, okay, thank you.
Yeah, almost like a weight was lifted off your shoulders.
Oh, it was. My girl at the time was inside. I was outside on my deck, and I walked in, and she looked at me because she obviously knew what was going on. And she looked at me like a concerned look, and she said, that was the first time I had smiled in 6 months. And I looked at her, I said, I'm out. And she was waiting to see my reaction, and when she saw how happy I was, you know, big hug, and, you know, it's very disappointing it didn't go in a different direction, but considering the direction that they went with it, it was never going to work. So I needed out of that contract. I wanted out of it. Again, I got, you know, I think I got paid a few more months on my contract, but I was done with them. I mean, it put me in such a horrible state that it took me a long time to recover.
Yeah, I, for one, and a couple of my friends, we were excited when you got signed just because we knew you from TNA and we were fans of America's Most Wanted. And, you know, on paper, it's amazing, but then the execution isn't always what you think it's going
to
be.
That's how it is, man. On paper, I was happy. I was ecstatic. I mean, I made it to the...
You made it to the big game,
yeah. Biggest company in the world.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, like I said before, not very many people from TNA got signed. So just because you got signed, I mean, that shows something about you, that there was something there.
Yeah, and I feel that too. I mean, they wouldn't sign just anybody. I think, in fact, I'd had talks with them a couple of years prior to that. I think my last contract was a 2-year contract with TNA. And I had talks with them even back then. So they were wanting to sign both Storm and myself. But I think we did the right thing, of course, and stayed with TNA, and which was the better choice. So, you know, when the feelers went out to see about that second time, Yeah, they expressed, you know, I think I'd said something like any interest. They said absolutely. And so when I going into it, not as a rookie or a startup guy, I felt like I had a better chance. But like we just talked about it, they had no intention of making anything work.
Yeah, they like the guys that they create. They don't really want other people's creations, you know. And you were a TNA guy, and I really wish they would, you know, they would have pushed you guys. But, it happens for a reason, I guess, and, you know, here you are today.
That's what I keep telling myself. Everything happens for a reason.
Everything happens for a reason, yeah. So, did TNA have, like, a chip on their shoulder about guys going to the WWE? Because you didn't come back right away. Kazarian didn't come back right away. I don't think Mighty Brown ever came back. And those are three guys, you, Frankie, and Monty, that just kind of went to WWE and then left really fast. Was there a reason why TNA didn't bring you guys back right away?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of a frustration there. I mean, you know, back then, you know, we're still trying to make TNA great and make it one of the biggest wrestling companies in the world. So for someone to leave them and try to make it, and then, you know, if it for whatever reason doesn't work out and you want to go, you know, back to TNA, yeah, I think they hold a little bit of a grudge. They kind of make you go through the hoops again. I honestly was not ready to go back because I was just so uncomfortable and awkward with wrestling that, you know, I talked to a few people, but, they weren't interested at the time. And to be honest, that was probably the best decision for me. I needed to take a break and, you know, kind of regroup and, you know, maybe search it out later on.
You did eventually come back to TNA for a couple. Was it a couple of guest appearances, or did you have a full run?
I had a very short run. I came back as Matt Hardy's partner.
Oh, you were feuding with Storm and Rude.
Right. We were going against Beer Money, and I had been sat down, and we talked about some great ideas coming up in the next few months, and they all sounded great, and it would have put me back in the picture. But we finished off a pay-per-view and it was done after that. I'm still to this day not exactly sure why. I know, you know, people in wrestling always change their mind to go a different direction. But, the match we had, I thought was a great match. Especially considering Hardy and I never teamed up before. And I've worked with Storm and Rude, numerous times in the past. But after that, they went in a different direction, and so
Ladies and gentlemen, I think I lost Chris Harris. Okay, I'm back.
Okay.
Where were we before we got disconnected? We were talking about, you going back to TNA. You did that match with Matt Hardy. You also came back as a mystery, not as a mystery, but like an imposter Sting. I guess that was like a one-off because it was never revealed on TV that it was you. I just remember reading online that it was you, and I was like, oh, man, this is great. Chris Harris is going to come back to TNA, and it never really came to anything. When they brought you back for the Sting thing...
Yeah, that was fun. And that had been played off of WCW times. There was many times they used me as a fake Sting. And I think, you know, this involved Jeff. So, and Jeff remembered all that. So yeah, that was fun. That was a one-time deal.
Oh, so Jeff just wanted you because you did it the first time in WCW, and so he thought it would be cool for you to recreate it?
I think so, yeah. They knew I had done it so many times before, and even Sting himself said, you know, it was weird how much I looked like him.
You did look like him. It was crazy. I thought it was like, it was a really good fake Sting, and then I read it was you, and I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah, we had fun with that, man, but like, you know, like I said, it was just a one-time deal.
So what did you do, like, life after TNA? Did you go out and do some indies? Did you do autograph signings? Did you just kind of leave the wrestling business for a little while?
Yeah, I stayed off for a couple years, just wanted to kind of regroup and, like I said, just get sane again, get my head back in the game. And that was during the time I was making a move back to Kentucky. And since then, I've been involved with the promotion that Abyss and I both came up in. So I've been involved with them and kind of taken a out-of-the-ring step. I wrestled for them for probably a year, and then in the past year, I've been doing more of interviews and even doing a local TV show where I'm a sports analyst, so I'm doing all kinds of different things with all sports, football, baseball, basketball, hockey. So there's a lot of good things going on where I don't have to get beat up to do them.
Well, that's good to hear. That's good to hear. What promotion is this?
It's the NWF.
Okay, okay.
Northern and Wrestling so kinda... Federation out of the tri-state here, out of Kentucky, Ohio, Indiana.
Oh, okay. So it's close to home. You could drive home afterwards probably.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't have to be on the road.
I've been doing, well, not lately, when I was still in Florida, I was doing a lot of conventions as well, which I thoroughly enjoyed because, you know, it didn't require taking bumps. And, you know, I would sit at these conventions and usually they had a good wrestling crew there. So, you know, a lot of guys I get to see that I haven't gotten to see in a long time. But that was enjoyable at the time. But, yeah, since I've been up here, I've been concentrating more on some local promotions.
During the convention time, doing the conventions and whatnot, did fans show you like a lot of like, all right, Chris Harris, or was it like, oh, this guy, Braden Walker? Because I know that sometimes wrestling fans can kind of like take the negative and kind of just make that what they see somebody.
Yeah, I mean, most people were fans of TNA, but there were several times, especially then, because it was still fresh. Where, you know, people wanted me to give a signature of Braden Walker, and I was so bitter, and, you know, I look back at this, and, you know, I should not have done this, but, you know, I just refused to sign autographs Braden Walker. I wanted to sign him, you know, as me, because I felt like that character, you know, was the demise of me. So yeah, for a good 6 months or to a year, I was like that. I wish I could go back and to all these people and sign whatever they wanted, you know, that, but they would even bring a picture of me up in WWE books, which I'd never thought I would be in there, but, you know,
they had me to the, in the encyclopedia.
Yeah, I think so. I was
wow.
A little surprised, but, you know, it would say Braden Walker. So of course I should sign it to Braden Walker, which I did.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy. I remember Colt Cabana, he felt like a little bit bitter about being in the WWE Encyclopedia that he would charge to sign those books just because he was like, you know, like I guess charge extra or whatever, I don't know. But he was pretty bitter, too, about being in the Encyclopedia when WWE kind of didn't really do much with them. Yeah, well, I'm glad to see that you're giving back, you know. You've been doing a lot of interviews with people. You've been, like you said, working for this independent promotion in your area. You've been doing the sportscaster thing. Like, you're doing pretty good for yourself there, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping it takes off, you know, that this is, it's all fun to do. And I feel like, you know, for somebody that's put 20 years into wrestling, it's time, you know, you have to kind of think of, you know, life after wrestling. Which I didn't prepare for because it had come much sooner than I thought. But then the injuries pile up. And like I said before, I've had some health issues. So this is all really, really good for me. And I can run my mouth with the best of them, so it's turning out good.
That's good. Yeah, and like you said, it's a job where you don't have to take a lot of bumps. You just kind of go out there and put your brain to work. Yeah,
definitely. Try to get some of the young guys over, you know, that you know, because we've all been there. We were all the young green kids at one point. So if I can do anything to help some of them by, you know, getting them over in an interview or anything like that, then, you know, I'm game for it, man. That's what I'd like to do.
Yeah, definitely. That's awesome. It's just, it's exciting giving back to the business. Giving back to the business, you know, that you love so much. Before I get out of here, though, I wanted to ask you a little bit about James Storm.
Okay.
He recently, you know, I tweeted this guy so many times. Hey, James, I'm trying to get a hold of Chris Harris. Can you help me out? And he ignored me every time. He's a big star. He doesn't want to talk to me. but he just signed with the WWE. Him, Sting, Samoa Joe, they're all up there. James Storm debuts on October 21st, I think, on TV. So tomorrow he's going to be on NXT. He's going to take the role as part-time on air and, as far as I know, part-time or full-time coach helping out with the kids, you know, the youngsters. What do you think about this this job for James?
I think it's incredible for him. So proud of him. I had hoped going into it that they would not treat him like they have many others. But when he debuted on NXT, you know, he had the same look, same gimmick, same name. So hopefully they run with that, because if they let Storm be Storm, he could go anywhere, man. I mean, so he's doing great. I didn't know about the coaching position.
I could be just making that up, but I'm pretty sure he's going to be some kind of – I mean, he could be. Maybe I'm just making that up, but he could be a coach.
Well, they need to put him on TV is what they need to do.
You know,
on the main roster.
He definitely, you know, he's no Dusty Rhodes, but I feel like James Storm can run one heck of a promo class.
Oh, he's great at promos. And
he's amazing.
And his in-ring work speaks for itself. So if they were smart, especially right now, I mean, I don't always look at, you know, the inside scoop or the ratings, but from what I understand, that WWE's hitting some lows. You know, if they were smart and stopped being idiots like they have in the past, you know, put somebody with some star power like James Storm on there and let him run with it, and we'll see what he can do.
Well, luckily for him, he's going to NXT, and that seems to be the hottest product in the world right now, even though WWE itself is, like, going through the roof, or going through the floor, rather. NXT is going through the roof, and they're amazing. They're doing a lot of good things, and I really feel like these young up-and-comers can learn a lot from a guy like James Storm and a guy like Samoa Joe.
Yeah, so Joe's still with NXT, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, so if they let these guys be themselves, these guys have done this thing for all these years. You know, to try to change them now is just ignorant.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
Let Joe be Joe. Let Storm be Storm. And just wait and see what they can do, and it'll speak for itself.
I think when you came in, like around 2008, they were a lot more stuck in their ways about changing everything, about making it their own. And I feel like now, 2015, here we are, Triple H has a lot more power in the company. I feel like they are kind of letting the guys be themselves a little bit more, at least the NXT level, because Samoa Joe, Sting is Sting, James Storm is James Storm. And I feel like they're embracing the outside. In fact, I was watching the preview on the WWE Network for the new Sting documentary, and he talks about going to TNA in there.
Who talks about going?
Sting, during the Sting documentary, he talks about going to TNA. I thought that was interesting.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I couldn't believe they let him talk about it.
Sting was very supportive in TNA. He helped out from the early days on, so I think it's good that he, you know, if he chooses to end his career in the next few years, then, you know, let him go out on top.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Well, thank you so much for the interview, Chris. I really appreciate it. I'm a big fan of yours. Big fan, like America's Most Wanted. When I think of TNA, I think of America's Most Wanted. I think of Triple X. I think of AJ Styles. I think of the good days, the Nashville days, when TNA was just on top of the world, basically. So thank you very much. I appreciate you stopping by, hanging out with me for a little bit.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Thank you for all the support, man. I really appreciate it. And I love guys that, you know, want to talk about the old days of TNA.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Before we go, you want to go ahead and give some social media and contact info?
Well, right now I just got my Twitter running. I don't have any Facebook or anything like that. I keep trying to get that bigger and better every day.
What is it at? Is it at AMW Wildcat?
Yes, that's it.
Oh, right. That was just a guess, too. Awesome, Chris. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you so much, sir.
And if you liked the interview with Chris Harris, give me a hell yeah. Hell yeah. Hey, thank you very much to Chris Harris for stopping by the podcast. It was a lot of fun. It was an honor. It was a pleasure. It was just so super duper cool talking to Chris Harris. So thank you very much to Chris Harris. Thank you very much to you for listening, for downloading, for subscribing, for leaving me positive feedback. Hey, by the way, where you go, leave me some positive feedback. Go to iTunes, blah, 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 search Pro Wrestling Nation. And if you like the podcast, I would love to see some positive feedback on the podcast, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean. Anyways, what's going on, people? Welcome back. There's a couple of news items I want to run down. What time is it? There's my mouse. I got time to rant, time to ramble. First thing is first, what should we talk about first? Awesome Kong. She had a little situation in TNA. I'm not too sure, the details, but I'll tell you what I think I know anyway. And if it's not, the truth, then just pretend like I made it up. Let's see. Awesome Kong did a shoot interview where she put Rebby's name in the hoe bag. I'm sure you guys have seen those shoot interviews on YouTube, You Shoot or whatever they're called. And I guess Rebby Sky got mad, cussed her out on some internet thing. And there's been heat, there's been bad blood ever since between the two. And since they've been together in TNA, they haven't really crossed their paths. And they've been kind of doing their own thing. Rebby's been changing in Matt Hardy's locker room because she's Matt Hardy's wife, which... I don't know why she would leave Matt Hardy's locker room. I'm sure Matt Hardy has a nice locker room. He's like the star of the show. Anyways, Rebby takes her baby and her bags, and she takes him to the women's locker room, and Awesome Kong has a problem with her. There's heat between the two. So Kong throws Rebby's bags out of the locker room, and then Rebby leaves, and she goes back in to get baby food or something that was in there, and then Kong was holding the door shut. And there was some kind of physical altercation between the two. And it's not a smart thing to beat up the top star's wife. Like what if Asuka came in and she just, or Nia Jax, we'll say Nia Jax because she's in the Next Generation Kong. What if Nia Jax came up to the main roster and she beat the crap out of Nikki Bella? You think she would have a job? No. And so that was last week or a few days ago. And then today, Awesome Kong announced her departure from TNA Wrestling, and I'm not surprised. So Awesome Kong is gone from TNA Wrestling. She had a similar incident with TNA a few years ago where she had a physical altercation with Bubba the Love Sponge, which I don't blame her for, but you still gotta follow the rules. I guess there was some kind of natural disaster in Haiti, and she has ties to there or something, and she took offense to it, and she, like, beat him up. I don't know what she did to him, but I know there's a physical altercation between the two, and she got fired from TNA then, and she got fired from TNA now. So there's one thing Kong knows how to do, it's get herself fired from TNA Wrestling. AJ Styles reportedly has backstage heat with the WWE. He signed a action figure deal before he came to the WWE, similar to what Kevin Owens did with Ring of Honor. I'm not sure if AJ's action figures are Ring of Honor or not, but he signed some sort of action figure deal, and apparently Vince McMahon didn't like that. I don't know. This is just right here. So if it's not right, if it's not true, then just pretend like I made it up. What else did I say I want to talk about? Sonny's sex tape. Wait, let's go back to AJ Styles. I really hope that he does not have backstage heat, man. AJ Styles is like the most awesomest, phenomenalist wrestler that there is. He is so cool, and I'm so excited that he's in the WWE. I'm going to go see him. The only reason why I even bought tickets to WWE Live was because I want to see AJ Styles live for the third time ever The first time I saw him was in 2004. My buddy and I flew to Orlando for the first TNA pay-per-view, which was Victory Road in 04. I think in November of 04. And we flew to Orlando from California to Orlando. We met everybody. In fact, I didn't even tell Chris Harris. It slipped my mind. I'm so stupid. I didn't even tell Chris Harris the story. When we were in Orlando, we were in line behind Chris Harris's uncle. We met him. He's like, hey, what's up, guys? How you guys doing? I'm Chris Harris's uncle. And we just like started talking to him and stuff. And then we were, some of you guys have heard the story. I might have a lot of new listeners just because of the whole GoRick.net thing. So I'll make a long story short. We're in Orlando the night before. We were partying. And so how do I make this story short? So it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, right? 11 o'clock for us, because we're from California. We wanted to keep partying, man. And so they're kicking us out of the bars, kicking us out of the clubs, whatever. We had to leave. We weren't drunk enough yet. It wasn't late enough yet. We weren't tired enough yet. We just wanted to party. And there's this dude over there going, hey, you guys. And we're like, what? And he got our attention, and he's like, you guys want to smoke a joint? And we're like, sure. And so he sparked it up right there, like right in the middle of the main area in downtown. And he's sitting there smoking it, and he smoking with him, and he's talking about how, oh man, where are you guys from? California? Oh, that's cool. They don't really care about marijuana in California, but out here, man, they'll throw the book at you, man. This stuff's crazy. They throw you in jail for this stuff. And I'm starting to get like a little scared. I'm like, oh, really? He's like, yeah, man, they throw the book at you for this, for weed out here, man. It's crazy. And just as he's talking about it, security rushes us, right? Dude walks off. He's gone. So this was completely a setup, a sting operation. Sorry, Sting, but I had to include you in the story. This was a sting operation, and security comes up. The police come up. We're totally busted. All we have is like a little half of a joint. And we're like criminals, okay? We're like the worst thing Orlando's ever seen. And he was like, you're banned from Universal. You're banned from City Walk. You're banned from half the hotels. You're banned from the hotel parking lots. You're banned from, he didn't name our hotel. Fortunately, he didn't name our hotel, but he named this hotel. And you're banned from all these places for 1 year. If you step foot on Universal Studios for 1 year, you will be arrested for trespassing. Well, it just so happens the next day was the TNA pay-per-view Victory Road in Orlando at Universal Studios, right? So what do you gotta do? What are you gonna do? Goonies say, never say die. Goonies never say die, man. I was born to be a Goonie. And so if you guys don't get that reference, then I'm sorry that I'm really old. So the next day we went in line. We were completely scared. We're so scared that we're going to get arrested. You know, like we're like early 20s. We leave our families. We fly across the United States of America to get arrested for half a little joint and trespassing. Like, we don't want this to happen, right? So we're totally scared. And my friend is really tall, so he can kind of see over the line, over the people's heads. And at some point, we meet Chris Harris's uncle. And we're talking to Chris Harris's uncle for a while. And so then he goes, hey, dude, don't get scared or anything, but security is walking right towards us. Oh, and I forgot to tell you, they took our pictures, and they hung up our pictures in the security office or wherever they hang the pictures. I don't know. But they took mugshots of us, like our pictures. So they were like on the lookout for us. And this was the next day. So he's like, dude, security's walking right towards us. Don't freak out. How could I not freak out, right? So I'm standing there. I'm so scared. And security walks up. He looks right at us, and he stops. And he goes, excuse me, guys. And I am so scared at this point that I was going to get arrested for trespassing, and I was going to miss a TNA pay-per-view. And he goes, excuse me, guys. And we're like, yeah. And then he points right at us and goes, hey, are those the VIP passes that you guys have? And we're like, yeah. And he goes, oh, you don't even have to wait in this line. You can just go in that door over there. And we went to that door so fast because that was freedom for us. That was home. We were going to be home free once we got into the building. And we went inside the building. And lo and behold, we get in there, we walk around a little bit, we find a place to settle in, and we're sitting down next to Chris Harris's uncle. Like, it was weird. It was just weird how we ended up next to this guy again. And so we're in there, AJ Styles versus Petey Williams for the X Division title. It was the one where Petey Williams came off the middle rope, landed, hit the, Canadian Destroyer, and got the 1-2-3. Petey Williams is a guy who I want to get on the podcast too, you guys. I want to get Petey Williams on the show. If you guys see Petey Williams, text him and tell him, we want you on Pro Wrestling Nation. I mean, don't text him, tweet him. Where was I going with that? Oh, I guess that was my Orlando story. We saw Chris Harris's uncle. Oh, and so after the show was over, Chris Harris's uncle told us, he said, he told us the bar that all the wrestlers go to after the show, which happens to be in the parking lot of the hotel that we were staying at. So it kind of worked out. And he's like, yeah, meet me there later tonight. And I'll introduce you to all the boys. And so we went there and we were hanging out and, we saw Chris Harris's uncle. And he walked us around and introduced us to James Storm and Bobby Roode and everybody. And AJ was in the bar and Kevin Nash was in the bar. I did a too sweet with Kevin Nash. He was my first ever real too sweet. I was like, Kevin Nash, too sweet, baby. And I did a too sweet with Kevin Nash. Since then, recently, I've done, actually Eric Bischoff was first, because Eric Bischoff was in like 02 or 03 when he was in WWE. I too sweeted Eric Bischoff. Let me tell you that story too. But then eventually I got Scott Hall and Sean Waltman. So the only person that I need to too sweet to complete my entire life is Hulk Hogan. Once I too sweet Hulk Hogan, my life will be complete. NWO 444 for life. Okay, so let me tell you a quick story about Eric Bischoff. We went to see Eric Bischoff at Tower Records. I know I'm old. Tower Records. He was there. It was during co-GM days where he was a GM. Steve Austin was a GM. And we were waiting in line for so long to see Eric Bischoff. I don't think I ever told this story on the podcast before, so you're in for an exclusive. We were waiting in line, and the guy in front of us was wearing a Stone Cold Steve Austin t-shirt, and my friend and I were so annoyed, because we didn't like Steve Austin, because he was so like, and he was so annoying. And Eric Bischoff, easy E, Eric Bischoff, hell yeah. And so while we were waiting in line, the guy, the Stone Cold guy, he went before us. And he was, did he go before us? Yeah, he went before us. And so we're standing there. We're next. And he walks over to Eric Bischoff. He's wearing a Steve Austin t-shirt. He walks over to Eric Bischoff and all you hear is, what? And my friend and I were so like annoyed. We're like, come on. That's Eric Bischoff, man. Come on. That's Eric Bischoff. What are you doing? And so, we were next in line. We walk up. Eric Bischoff has a sour puss look on his face. You know he's not having a good time because he's a heel. Everybody hates him. Everybody likes Steve Austin. Everybody's talking smack to him. He has a sour puss look on his face. He's like, hey guys, how's it going? Nice to meet you. And he just doesn't want to be there. And he puts out his hand because he's shaking everybody's hand. He puts out his hand and I say, no, Mr. Bischoff, not like that. Like this. And I put up my too sweet and Eazy-E got the biggest smile on his face. And I took a picture with him. And then my friend took a picture with him. He too-sweeted him too. And he went to sign my autograph. Because he had like their generic WWE 8x10s. It just says WWE on it. And it's all plain. It's like gray or something. Like it looks like smoke or broken glass or whatever. It's just like a design. And it's all gray. And they just write Eric Bischoff. You know, whatever. And so he went to sign my autograph. And I go, Mr. Bischoff, will you please write NWO for life? And he thought about it. He was like he thought about it because the NWO was done. He was in WWE. It was just like, you know, and I go, Mr. Bischoff, will you please write NWO for life? And he wrote, to Sam or whatever. He wrote to Sam, keep watching WWE. And then he put a big slash and he put NWO for life. Eric Bischoff. And that is like the most amazing thing. So I took the picture of me and I got it developed. And so what I did was I framed the signature and I had the picture of me and him in the frame. So it's me and him, his autograph, and it says NW for life. So that's like one of my most prized possessions, you guys. It's in storage right now though. I mean, it's not, it's at my grandma's house in a box It's not in storage, but it's at my grandma's house in a box. Yeah, there's that. What else is there to talk about in the world? That was old news, too. I didn't even talk about anything new. It's 9:15. Okay, I got to wrap this up in about 15 minutes or whatever. What else was I going to talk about? AJ Styles, Eric Bischoff, Awesome Kong, Bret the Hitman Hart. As some of you know, I don't know if you know, but I'm a huge mark for the Harts. I've had Mike Hart on several times. I've had Jason Sensation on telling Owen Hart stories. I've had Diana Hart Smith on. The first time I had her on as a two-parter, and then I had her on again. So I've had three episodes of Diana Hart Smith. And I've been in the process of trying to get Jim Neidhart on. I'm a mark for the Harts. I love the Hart family. Bret the Hitman Hart's my favorite wrestler of all time. Smith Hart was diagnosed with prostate cancer and bone cancer. And then this week, that was last week or something, and then this week Bret Hart announced that he has prostate cancer as well. The internet has been overwhelmingly supportive of Bret Hart. You know, fight Bret fight. Put the sharpshooter on cancer. Bret can beat cancer. You know, Bret's the best there is, the best there was, the best there ever will be. Madison Square Garden even did like a big tribute to Bret Hart on their big screen that said best wishes to Bret the Hitman Hart. That's a class act, man. Public sports teams, like people have been coming out of the woodwork to show support to Bret the Hitman Hart. And I think it's amazing, dude. Bret Hart has done so much. He's so accomplished. He's like, all of our childhoods are Bret Hart. You know what I mean? And he's my absolute favorite wrestler of all time. And he's been through so much, you know, whether it's getting screwed in Montreal, or it's the death of Owen, or the death of Davey, or the stroke he had, or his career-ending injury. Like, Bret Hart has been through so much. And now he has to fight prostate cancer. So I just want to say best wishes. I mean, Smith Hart, too, because Mike Hart is a good friend of mine. And I talk to Mike Hart all the time. And, in fact, Mike told me about this before it even went public. Like, he was telling me. I hit him up. I'm like, you okay, man? Because he sounded pretty down on Facebook. And he told me about it before it even went public. And he told me not to say anything. And I didn't. But now it's kind of out there, so I can. It's sad, though, you know, both of these guys, my friend's dad here, you know, Smith Hart, Bret the Hitman Hart, my favorite wrestler of all time. I want to wish the Hart family the best, you know. It's trying times. It's tough times right now, but I just wish the Hart family the very, very absolute best. And then going from that to this, Axel Rotten, ECW original, ECW legend, has passed away at the age of 44. Nothing is official. Nobody knows how he died or whatnot. I've heard that he died, in his hotel room. I heard he died outside of McDonald's. I don't know what the truth is there, but I do know that Axel Rotten has passed away, and it's very, very sad because he was an ECW original. So, you know, our rest in peace, Axel Rotten. What else is going on in the world today? Sonny. And then going from that to that to this, Sonny, they released her sex tape and people watched it. My friend Thomas, I shouldn't say his name, I'm going to beep. No, my friend Thomas, you guys don't know him. He told me he was going to watch this video, and then I asked him to send me a review, and he didn't. The bastard. I think he was too embarrassed that he watched it. I don't even know if he watched it or not. He told me he was going to, though. And I wanted a review of this damn Sonny sex tape, but she wears her Hall of Fame ring in it. That's cool, right? She's crazy. She challenged China to a sex match. I don't know what that means. All I know is that I read the thing that TMZ said, and Sonny said something along the lines of, I know I can't beat China in the ring, but I could probably beat her in the bedroom. And I don't know what that means. So let's move on to something else. Something way less disgusting. NXT has released 5 people. It's funny because I didn't even know they signed Magno, whatever that guy's name was. The funny part is that Magno, I don't remember what it was called. Remember in TNA? Oh, Gut Check. Remember they were doing Gut Check? They had Magno versus Adam Pearce, and then Magno won, and Adam Pearce got released or didn't get the contract or whatever. You know, you remember that, right? Adam Pearce is an NXT coach and Magno is an NXT trainee. Like, not even on NXT TV yet. Like, listen to this. TNA took Magno. I don't know if I'm saying his name right. TNA took Magno over Adam Pearce. Okay. And in the WWE, Adam Pearce is a trainer. He's a coach. And Magno is a guy who they signed who isn't even on NXT TV, who wasn't even doing NXT house shows. He's a rookie. He's not even as good as Eva Marie in the WWE's eyes. So let me tell you how TNA makes their decisions. Anyways, they released Magno. They released some other dude who has never been on TV, who I never heard of. And the meat and the potatoes of the story, though, is they released Sylvester... What the hell is his name? Sylvester... Marcus Louis and Bull Dempsey and Sylvester... you guys know who I'm talking about, right? I don't remember his name. I can look it up, but I don't feel like it. I think I have Gerwick.net handy because I was just looking at it before I came on. Here it is, Gerwick.net. Let's see. TNA, Knockout, SmackDown, Steve Austin Talks. More in the passing of Axel Rotten. Let's click on that real quick and see what it says. Do-do-do-do-do. If my internet wasn't messing up right now. I got to get this podcast done in pretty quick here. That's taking forever. Okay. Anyways, I guess you guys don't care what that guy's last. You guys know who he is. Just look it up online. let's see here. Is this going to load or what? Let me try that again. I want to know more on Axel Rotten's death. The passing of Axel Rotten. That sounded like kind of disrespectful the way I said it, but it's not, I didn't mean it that way. Dave Mirra died too. He's a BMX guy. I didn't really know him, but I knew his game. Like, he had some game on PlayStation or something. Dave Mirra BMX. My phone's gonna die, and then I'm gonna take the bus to work, and that's gonna be dead. That sucks, but that's life. Anyways, it's not loading for me, so I guess I'm not gonna read you guys the article right now. What else is going on in the wrestling world? There's a few other things I wanted to talk about. I want to talk about NXT TakeOver. I guess I could wait. It's spoilers involved. Shinsuke Nakamura, that's what I wanted to talk about. Shinsuke Nakamura is going to debut at NXT Dallas. Spoiler alert. I'm sorry. Fast forward it 30 seconds. He's going to face Sami Zayn. NXT Dallas is going to be really, I'm so excited for that match. Shinsuke Nakamura is going to be, he signed a 3-year deal with the WWE, similar to what AJ Styles signed. And he's going to debut as Shinsuke Nakamura. He's going to be in NXT for at least a couple of matches. I guess it depends on where he is as far as like WWE style goes, because he's never been here. And this is his first real big U.S. run. I mean, he did Ring of Honor a couple times, but that's not really, you know, that's more his own style. But he has to work WWE style. And right now he's training at the Performance Center, and he's learning what WWE style is and what WWE style means. And he's going to be in NXT for at least a couple of matches. I think it would be cool, though, is if Shinsuke Nakamura made a huge surprise at... What if he came out and he beat the crap out of The Undertaker at WrestleMania? Like, how cool would that be, right? Or he came out and got in Brock Lesnar's face, and he just, like, Shinsuke Nakamura versus Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. Like, how cool would that be? And it wouldn't be the first time, because these guys fought in New Japan. Trust me, go on YouTube, there's a match, Brock Lesnar versus Shinsuke Nakamura. Let's see, what else? So, he's gonna keep the name Shinsuke Nakamura for NXT, but that doesn't guarantee he's going to keep the name when he goes up to the main roster. Shinsuke Nakamura is kind of a mouthful. A lot of fans are probably not going to have, they're probably not going to easily be able to say it. So I'm assuming he's going to be called Nakamura. I mean, that's a lot easier to say. I mean, don't get me wrong. I would love for him to be called Shinsuke Nakamura, but we all know how Vince is with names. I mean, look at Adrian Neville. Look at Alexander Rusev. Look at Antonio Cesaro. Yeah, Vince McMahon's kind of weird. Was there anything else I wanted to talk about before I got out of here? I don't think so. I gotta wrap this up because I gotta get this online and stuff. Super Bowl City, San Francisco Bay Area. WWE San Jose, I will next week, I will bring you a report on the podcast, and I have an awesome person lined up next week, ECW Original. Folks, I'm not going to tell you the name, of course, but I have an ECW Original lined up. I don't want to say the name just because sometimes things fall through and things don't always happen, but if everything goes according to plan, next week on this very podcast on Pro Wrestling Nation on Goodrick.net, you will hear an ECW original. Just like today, you heard a TNA original. So thank you to Chris Harris, AMW Wildcat on Twitter. Thank you to Funky Sam Medina for hosting the show. Thank you for listening to the show, for downloading, for subscribing, for leaving positive feedback. And if you want your very own Pro Wrestling Nation t-shirt, don't forget to go to prowrestlingtees.com/prowrestlingnation. Pick up your very own Pro Wrestling Nation t-shirt. Until next time, folks, my name is Funky Sam Medina. For Chris Harris, thank you very much. Have a good night.